And away we go.
So I did a heart transplant.
Whoa.
And that's
all by yourself?
All by myself. Well, it's see one, do one, teach one. You know, wow. So technically I'm just doing the next one.
So you're due one now.
Yeah, yeah. So I saw one and I get to do the next one all by myself.
I can't believe you didn't put it on our TikTok yet that you had done a whole surgery.
By myself.
By yourself.
Yeah, yeah, that's next. Hello, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
I'm Riley.
I'm Jack.
This is Progress Note, and this is a kind of long-awaited one.
Yeah, seriously. And thanks for tuning in again. Thanks for going and checking us out after the TikTok blew up with our advertisements for our podcast.
Yep, yep, yep. I know it's getting a ton of views right now. Progress Note Podcast on TikTok. Just look it up.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, today we are going to be chatting about kind of some of the craziest experiences that we've had in medical school and things that, I don't know, reflecting on it, I would have been beside myself if I knew that this had happened 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we have so many more stories than this, so I think this could be like a trend that we do every so often.
I like it. I like it. We'll try and keep these episodes a little bit shorter.
Yeah, for sure.
That way we can just run with it. But today we both have three different stories that we want to tell you guys about.
Yeah, man.
All right,
you're up first.
Should we just hop into it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I wasn't lying about the heart transplant. I actually did help with that. I'm not actually doing one myself, but...
No, that's good. I would not touch a heart.
Yeah. Well, I did touch the heart. That's part of this.
That's bad.
It's not... Hey. It was the heart that was already out of the body, so it was fine. I couldn't mess it up even more.
It was the dud heart.
It was the gone heart.
What'd you do with it?
I put it in a bucket.
Oh.
It's soupy. Ugh. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. You know when you have in anatomy lab, you have the embalmed heart.
It's
pretty firm. Every muscle is very clear.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was expecting, but it was more along the lines of that. And when they handed me the heart that they had just taken out, it almost like seeped through my hands.
Oh, wow.
It's like... liquidy tissue that's very flexible, which makes sense. Wow. It's pumping blood the whole time, but it felt like, you know, those like the gel tubes that you hold one way and it like falls out of your hand and then you hold the other way and it falls out of your hand. Those things felt like that in my hand. Wow. It was crazy.
So you'd been training for this, like, I remember getting those things from the Rainforest Cafe when I was younger.
So you're ready to hold a
dead heart.
Yeah, pretty much.
Man.
So
could have scared people. Take a bite. Sacrificial.
No, they were like, Riley, here's a heart. Don't you dare drop it. I was like, that's a lot of pressure. This thing is falling out of my hands already. So anyway, then I threw it at the other student. No, I didn't do that. Nerd. I didn't do that. So let me walk us through this heart transplant because it was absolutely nuts.
I imagine.
Like... there were points in it where I was questioning everything I've ever lived in my whole life because I was like, what the fuck is this? First off, you crack the chest, buzzsaw through the sternum.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see a live beating heart, it is unbelievable. Wow. Like, I've never seen anything like it.
I probably would cry.
I almost started tearing up. It's wildly unexpected in comparison. Like, you can prep all you want. It's nothing like what you see.
Wow.
So we're in there, we prep everything, get to the heart, put him on bypass.
Mm-hmm.
And so for any of our listeners who don't know, that's when you essentially plug a tube into each of the four big vessels coming out of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And reroute the blood through a almost mechanical heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can bypass the heart.
Right.
And so you can keep somebody on... bypass for, I want to say, ever. Over 8 hours, something like that.
not forever. Okay.
Like over 8 hours and still have perfect function.
That's so cool.
And so, like, looking, I stood right next to this machine the whole time, and it was like this humongous mechanical fake heart.
Hmm.
And we were able to then stop the blood flow to the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat there and we waited for the new heart to come from a different place in the country, which we can't talk about.
Uh-huh.
But
What region?
It flew in.
What time zone?
It flew in, and so we were trying to time this where we would open it up.
Yeah.
And as we're removing the heart, the new one gets here, right? Like, that's that would be ideal.
Right.
Problem is, once you get up in the air, it's hard to communicate. So we have an estimated time of arrival, and we end up getting through it a little bit more efficiently than we thought. So we're sitting there for a solid 45 minutes with nothing to do, with this guy that just, like, is on bypass, doesn't have a heart in his body.
Wow.
And we're just waiting for this new heart to come in.
That's so crazy.
And so I'm, like, poking the old heart, like, like it's in the bucket. I'm, like, looking at it like it was my anatomy class.
Wait, why don't we have, like, transplant operating rooms just, like, right on the premises of airports? Sorry, keep going.
What do you mean? Oh, like, at an airport?
Yeah. Anyway.
That's a good question.
Keep going.
Anyway, so I used my extra time to kind of look at it like an anatomy lesson where I'm comparing what we saw in the embalmed hearts to what I can now see in this still alive heart almost, technically dead, but like just out of the body. And it's remarkable how different things are.
Yeah.
It really is. And the texture and the way that it like functions is just...
In taste?
Yeah. No. No. So anyway, after that, the heart gets here and it is in a glass box. I don't know if you've seen these machines yet, but it's this huge wheeled glass box and it is just the heart inside of it pumping.
Pumping.
By itself. That's crazy. Like it, well, not by itself. It's a mechanical bypass machine for the heart itself. And so that's when I started almost having like a mini panic attack because I was looking at just a heart in a glass box pumping by itself. And everyone is dead silent just watching it to make sure that it's like the functioning heart that we want. And so there's 12 of us standing around this glass box of only a heart pumping by itself.
Yeah.
And it was dead silent, so you could just hear the blum, 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 blum. And we were like, oh, my God. Yeah, that's when I almost started crying.
That's crazy. What the hell am I looking at? I probably would have just passed out right there.
Yeah, it was scary. So anyway, that's after 4 and some change hours, too. So I was almost ready to pass out. And when you're scrubbed, you can't sit. So this is 4 and some change hours of standing up next to the... to the patient at the operating table. I had a wedgie since like hour 2. You can't fix that just the whole time. And
You're sterile.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh.
Can't do anything about it. So I'm sitting there for an extra 4 hours after that too.
Did you pee your pants?
I thought about it. I really did. No, I the wedgie was so uncomfortable though. I was like sitting there trying to adjust my body. Like, it looked like I was doing this weird dance by the table.
Wait, dude, you didn't pee for the whole time?
No, I didn't go to the bathroom for 10 hours.
Did you not drink, like, for the
I drank a coffee and then made sure to pee right before going in. Oh, so that I was, like, kind of awake and locked in.
Goodness.
And then I was just there.
I couldn't do that.
The adrenaline itself kept me going for a while, I will say. Like, after seeing the heart, I was locked in.
Wow. That's amazing.
So, yeah, then we replaced the heart. Did some, like, made sure everything was functioning. And the coolest part of all of it was when you stop the machine that the heart comes in, the heart stops pumping. And a heart can last for a certain amount of time without being on that machine. But, it's scary to just see the heart sitting there. And you're like, oh, my God. So you put the heart back in, stitch it up. Start to wean them off bypass, and the heart takes a little while to kick in. And so there's a point where, like, everyone is kind of completely silent, looking at the heart that is now stitched in and being like,
okay,
shit, I hope this works. And so to stimulate it, every once in a while, the attending would
poke it.
Like just like that, and then the whole thing would contract.
Wow.
And it's just one huge contraction as soon as you touch it. Like out of a movie, out of a space movie where you poke an alien and everything just starts to move. That's what it looks like.
It.
Like literally, you know that meme where it's like, do something. And it's like the guy yeah. poking it with a stick. That's what it felt like it was.
I'm going to poke it with a stick.
Do something. But then, like, I'm watching the EKG up on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's completely flatlined since we took the heart out. Or since we went on bypass, technically. And then all of a sudden, you see these little spikes start.
Wow.
And so you hear that, like, go away, mm-hmm. that continuous beeping start to go away, and you see the little bumps every once in a while, and it's sporadic at first. And then once it kicks in and you see the heart start actually pumping,
wow.
Like nothing I've ever seen in my life. Totally worth the 10-hour wedgie.
Wow.
Let me tell you that.
You guys just selly then?
Everyone except the attending has done it 100 times, so he was like, all right, let's go. And everyone else was like, yeah. He's like, I've been here literally 300 times.
Dude, they should, like, play music.
I know.
It was sick.
That was the other thing. That's the only surgery I've been in where it was dead silent the whole time. No music.
I wonder why. Because they're just serious.
Yeah, super serious the whole time.
Yeah, you have to be such a champ.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. That guy is a machine.
I bet.
That physician is an absolute machine, and he was so impressive when we were in there.
Wow.
But, yeah, so now, like, I did the role of a medical student. I helped with kind of close, like cutting the sutures, holding things in place, holding mm-hmm. retractors. So didn't do a whole lot, but I can officially say I have helped in a heart transplant.
Whoa. Sounds like you could probably do one.
See one, do one, teach one.
I'm next. And then you can teach me.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can do the one after that.
We could open, stay with me. Open a transplant center right on the premises of an airport.
It's kind of brilliant. And I'm kind of confused why they don't have that. It's definitely... We definitely have the helicopter pads at...
Oh, for sure.
At the hospital, though.
Think about it. All right. That's one thing that we'd buy. We'd also need to buy, like, one of the fastest planes on Earth. Like, one of those Blackbirds from back in the day. Those were
steal one from...
Area 51.
I was going to say Area 53. And they're like, that's not right.
And then, yeah, we fly anywhere. Yeah, all right, cool.
All right, and let's lock that in as our next venture after the podcast takes off. With the funding, all right, every listen that you give us is one listen closer to our airport transplant.
Think about all the organs we can move around the country and the world.
I can see it now.
These guys saw the future.
All right.
They're going to be growing organs soon enough anyway.
I know. There are books that warn us about that, but, you know.
Wait,
that's for another story.
Why don't we just, we tell your stories this time, and then we could do a different episode. I'll tell mine. We'll just keep it rolling that way. So we do, like, 3 and 3.
I mean, I guess, but this is just all about me.
Actually, that's fine.
You know, I love that. Everything about me, actually.
Dude, you have good stories.
No, you got 3 good ones up on the board too.
I'm just thinking we won't get through all of them.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, let's do 2 each then, and then we'll swap it on next time.
All right. Okay. This one.
My nose is still bleeding. So I didn't introduce that to the. Sorry for all of the listeners that just had to hear that. My nose popped a bleed right before we went to record, and now it's just. The hand sanitizer didn't help.
I know. This guy, like, snorts stuff all the time.
Nope. Incorrect.
That's how he takes his caffeine.
Do you imagine? Oh, God. That would be gross.
So abrasive. It'd
be so painful.
That's how he eats.
Snorting broccoli.
Yeah. No. It's not drugs. It's, like...
It's literally broccoli.
It's nutrients.
All right. You go.
Okay. This one was during inpatient pediatrics. And so a lot of the patients that we had were there for a long time because, as you guys know, Riley and I were on the hematology oncology unit at Connecticut Children's Medical Center. So we had this patient who came in really kind of is like robust, the right word for somebody that's like really healthy. Yeah, super healthy dude on a trip cross country from his family. And so he's working over here for a while. And over the last couple weeks before he came to the hospital, he started having, like, some, like, flu-like illness almost. He had a background as, like, a climber amongst, I think, like lacrosse and some other sports, but like really, really active,
impressive, in great shape.
And he suddenly wasn't able to do the same kind of endurance stuff that was happening. Night sweats, coughing, started to lose weight, which is really kind of crazy. Some shortness of breath, like he couldn't breathe in all the way. Apparently he talked to his parents. They're like, all right, go to urgent care, like get it checked out. Maybe you have like a walking pneumonia or something like that. Urgent care evaluates him. They don't really pick up on anything, but they have some worries from kind of like what we say is red flag symptoms, like this night sweats thing. They're like, oh, like
and
that's
the weight,
not good.
Unintentional weight loss.
Yeah, and he's had like weird weight loss, which he's like normally like pretty muscular. So they get a chest x-ray. Huge, huge radio density, like obscuring a lot of his chest cavity. They're like, oh my gosh. Send him to the hospital. This is like down in the state somewhere before he gets to Hartford. They get CT, massive mass in his thorax. So like in the same space where his lungs are and outside of, I guess it was kind of like, it was kind of mediastinal, like at least connected to, but then protruded into the rest of the, his chest cavity. Since he was not yet of an adult age, he was then transferred. He was medevaced to Connecticut Children's, to Harvard, then Connecticut Children's, where they did more tests on him and whatnot, and then we received him as a team. And my attending at the time, when she saw his imaging, was like, this is the largest mediastinal mass I've ever seen in my career. And she's been around for a long time. I think she's had a career, maybe probably like 20 years or so, in pediatric oncology. And so when we see the kid, he is like super normal looking. You would have no idea that he had this massive growth like going on. And I got to know him really, really well. He was there on, I don't know, I don't want to share too much information, he was there for something that he really, really cared about. He's living across the country for something he really, really cared about. He's really passionate about. But he was all by himself, and I couldn't imagine being all the way across the country by myself as like not even really an adult. Like I don't even feel like an adult now. For like a really scary medical condition where we didn't know exactly what was going on. But his family came out for a bit. I got to know them really, really well. This kid was like a musician. He was playing the guitar like many times. I'd go in to hang out with him, get to play video games, which I guess he hadn't been able to do in like a year or so since coming over.
That's what I loved about the inpatient floor. Like those kids get to live a life while they're in there, even though it doesn't seem like it. They are so good at taking care of those children and making sure that they still have some sort of quality while they're in the hospital for long stays.
CCMC is excellent. Absolutely excellent. And so I got to know him and his family a bit too, and we actually we're gonna keep in touch a little bit once he wasn't our patient anymore, and once he was back to home. But the really crazy and cool kind of part of the story is, besides him getting better, and I've gotten updates from our attending at the time, just because he ended up having a type of Hodgkin's lymphoma that I guess kind of melts away once you get him on that regimen, that ACVD or whatever it is.
That's so nice. Good.
Just kind of melts away, which is crazy. But the really kind of cool part of the story was the organization that he was working with was willing to do whatever it took to get him home to their home hospital. And so I was part of the team to set up his medevac, which was insane. But there's all these stipulations where you can't discharge a patient from a hospital, or you can't like transfer them to an emergency department, and that was the only way that the hospital for some reason logistically would be able to receive him back in his home state. So we had to come up with all these things, and then it was going to be like $150 per mile for the flight, but he also needed to have medical staff aboard because he wasn't like completely stable. Despite like being really healthy, he still wasn't stable, and they're worried that he could decompensate during the flight. So this like huge donor came for us too, and was I'll front the bill, and it was like $300,000 or something like that.
Damn, I love people.
Like, yeah. They sent him back in like some equivalent of like medical Air Force One. And he's living unreal. Large, like taking videos of himself on the private jet.
Oh, yes.
And he had this crazy sense of humor this whole time. We had a really good time. He's a good dude. And then the nurses on the floor loved him. They're like, he's a supermodel.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, that's my boy.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was interesting. It was interesting to hear that like logistical side of everything. And
You don't really think about that sometimes when it comes to such critical care. Yeah. You kind of forget that there's so much that goes on behind the scenes in terms of insurance billing. Like, this kid needs life-saving treatment.
Right.
But to get him to his hometown is going to cost $300,000.
Yeah.
And so that's why I feel like we're fortunate to be a part of a system that has people that are willing to donate money like that and to support causes like that. Sure. Because without that, it would be a much, much different story.
Yeah.
That's a great story, though. I like that.
Yeah, it was cool. Really nice, nice ending, too.
Yeah. All right, and then we'll do one more each kind of quick here. Also on that same floor,
mm-hmm.
I ran into this younger girl who we both ended up getting actually really close with throughout our time. And when I was there, it was still in kind of this diagnosis phase where no one had any idea what's going on. She's been here for a while. She's has all of these different symptoms that kind of correlate with some things, kind of contradict some things.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was an overarching like top maybe 10 diagnoses that we had, which is already such a broad spectrum. And we couldn't start treatment because some of the treatments for one of the options would be harmful in mm-hmm. another setting.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're sending out all of this testing. We have help from people at Boston Children's. Mm-hmm. We have a pathologist at the NIH looking at things. We had people at Johns Hopkins involved with it. So, like, we had this one incredibly complex patient that we have had for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. We have run genotype testing, all of these different labs. We're sending out specific markers. We're getting help from literally the best hospitals and programs in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody has been able to find out definitively what it is yet.
That's so crazy.
And so I don't know what it was, but like she was changing my perception on the world. And so when I went home, I sat down and I just grinded on research for like literally 12 hours one day where I was just looking at her condition.
Mm-hmm.
I got into all these little rabbit holes, like trying to backtrack, be like, this makes sense, but this one doesn't make sense. Obviously, doing similar processes to what mm-hmm. the attendings had already done. But then I started doing this chart work and kind of looking at these history points from visits a long time ago
mm-hmm.
And started coming up with kind of a more targeted diagnosis list. And the next, like 2 days later, after I had done a ton of research, I typed up my stuff and I handed it to mm-hmm. the attending. And we sat down together for like 2 or 3 hours and we went through the diagnosis list.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, I was like, even though not everything adds up, I really think that this is probably our best option of pursuit. And she's like, yeah, we have that on the list. This core biopsy doesn't necessarily line up with it. Like, it's not out of the option.
Mm-hmm.
But we sent out for some tests. I'll add this genotype test to it just so that we can see as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so then time goes by, blah, blah, blah. I finished the rotation, and I'm pretty sure this is like right when we're transitioning.
Mm-hmm.
We find out after a lab comes back from Boston Children's that diagnosis that I told her I thought it was the most likely thing based on her genotyping sequence. And I started I almost started bawling. I was like, oh my God. And so I was with my mom when I found out. I was like telling her the whole story and she was freaking out. It was such an incredible feeling to see what we're learning actually like come to fruition. And like, there's a lot of times also where I'm sitting in this class and I'm like, damn, I really feel like an imposter. Like, imposter syndrome is so real for everyone. Yeah. And I do something like, I went through something like that. And I'm like, damn, okay, maybe I can hack it every once in a while. Like, maybe I know a little bit.
Yeah, man.
And so that was super just exciting to have some sort of answer for her because it's already so brutal to be sitting in her situation in the hospital, going through all these tests, having people poke and prod and not knowing what's going on. And the symptoms are getting worse. And like, all that is so bad. And then to add on to it, we had no answers for her.
Yeah.
And so every time I would go in and talk to her, like, I remember so clearly one time when I went in by myself, she asked me, she's like, am I going to die?
Mm.
And I was like, no training has ever prepared me for something like that.
No.
And you had like such a young kid ask you that. And luckily I feel like I handled it reasonably well for a third year medical student on his second rotation. Because when I talked to the attending about it, she was like, that's exactly what I would have said. But then, like, to go in and be able to hand them test results and be like, we have something that we want to start treating. And their faces were, like, just glowing. And so that was just one of those stories where you're like, man, it's all this work is coming to something.
Mm.
Seeing it pay off a little bit here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And she, by the end of my time, she was doing so much better. She was discharged. Yeah.
That makes me so happy, actually.
Yeah, she was so sweet.
I didn't know how to, like, contact people there about the situation because you never, like, you can't just text about certain patients or anything.
Right.
So I was hoping that I'd eventually find out kind of what happened there. But I'm very, very happy to hear that she was discharged.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. That's what it's all about.
All right, Jack, you got time for one more.
All right. This one, non-medical setting. The opposite of a medical setting. But it happened during medical school, and it happened not that long after we had the basic life-saving course. So like CPR and kind of emergency stabilization at our level. And recognizing signs, that kind of stuff. We also had some other kind of experience, just, I guess, like baseline illnesses that you got to consider. We were at that point, but this was first year, so it was still like pretty early. We're on the plane back from Miami, Florida, after a brief stint there, blowing off some steam.
Yeah, what'd you do in Miami?
We went to the beach, you know, and just pretty much just went to the beach.
Yeah,
and
that's it. What everyone was telling me
in Miami. Happened. Yeah.
Anyway,
and we also studied while we were there.
A lot of Anki
studying,
and a lot of flashcards.
Yeah,
you whirled
so much. I learned a ton, and so we're on our plane ride back.
Definitely did learn a ton. Yeah, actually.
I was falling asleep. And I get kind of like brushed by, I'm on the aisle seat in the center. It's a big plane, so it's like the 2-3-2 kind of thing. And I get brushed by really quick and kind of wakes me up. I'm not like that much of a deep sleeper anyways. And nurse like hustles past me. So I'm like, oh, what's going on? Kind of try to close my eyes again. Same thing again. I get hit again. Somebody else rushes past me.
Like ready to throw hands.
I'm like, oh my gosh, what is going on? Is somebody grabbing me? And I'm like, what is going on? And the guy next to me saw that I hit, and he's like, oh, I guess there's, like, medical emergency or something like that towards the back of the plane. I'm like, oh, man. And he's just, like, staring at me. And I'm like, uh-huh.
Yeah,
and
that's crazy.
I'm like, why is he looking at me? And then I foolishly... I learned after this, unless you're into this kind of thing, I was wearing my UConn School of Medicine sweatshirt. And I said to the guy, you think I should go? And he's like, Yeah. So I'm like, oh my.
Do you know I'm a first year?
I'm like, okay.
I just learned what hypertension means.
Like, I don't know shit at this point. And so I like tentatively get up and I go back towards the back of the plane, and there's a couple nurses around. And I see that there's a girl that's like in distress, still seated. And I walk back there and I'm like, hey, do you think I could help in any way? And the nurse just like pulls me by the arm. She's like, yes. And like pulls me down to a knee, like next to this girl. And she's like, talk to him, talk to him. I'm like, oh my God, okay. All right, here we go. So I have like my listening ears on.
It's clinical skills.
And I'm going to go through my list of like all the time, duration, pain. Yep. Where is it? What does it feel like? All that stuff. So I start going through that. And this girl is profusely sweating. She's breathing really, really hard. I don't have like a stethoscope, obviously. I don't have like anything really on me. And I looked at the other flight attendants that are right there, and I'm like, do we have a med kit?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh yeah, of course. And they kind of slide it over towards me, and it has like a few kind of rudimentary things. There's like a blood pressure cuff that goes around the wrist, which I had not used before. So I didn't know exactly what to do at first. So I was just looking like an idiot, like playing with this. I'm like, this is not big enough for her arm. Like, this isn't the right size.
Why do we only have an infant cuff in here?
I'm like, oh my God, this is for babies. And I like fooling around. Not fooling around, but testing different things, like slide it down her arm. And then I see that it starts to pick up a pulse. And so I'm like, oh, it definitely goes on her wrist. So we keep it there. And we're getting vitals, and I'm talking to her. I'm like, hey, you guys, like, I know we're in Miami. Were you guys drinking? And they're like, no. And I was like, were you drinking today? And they're like, no. I'm like, you can tell. Like, I'm not going to get you in trouble. Yeah. I'm the same age as you. Like, I'm not going to. And they're like, okay, we were drinking, but we weren't today. I was like, okay. And then I was like, were you guys smoking anything, like, last couple of days or today? And they're like, no. I was thinking, like, hyperemesis syndrome, mm-hmm. something like that. And, I'm like, what did you eat? They're like, yeah, we ate at the airport. And I was like, oh.
Is she allergic to anything?
That's interesting. Ask about allergies. No allergies to anything. I'm like, okay. So I'm starting to think. I'm like, all right, you ate something at the airport. I remember hearing something about, like, a lot of times. Sorry, guys. The food at the airport is kind of, like, out for mm-hmm. a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be turned over as much. And so you worry about maybe, like, some dairy stuff or, like, things that have egg in it that might have been out.
Custard.
She
a little staff a in there.
She had Pizza Hut.
Oh.
And they have like those hot and ready pizza things at the airport, apparently. Sorry to Pizza Hut, but like this is what happened.
Been hot and ready for 3 days.
And I'm like, oh, okay, so something's going on. And I'm talking to her. She's like starting to seem like she's doing a little bit better. Her friend isn't all that interested in what's going on, even though she's freaking out. They had, like, a really flimsy stethoscope, so I'm, like, trying to listen to her.
Just, like, using a kid's toy stethoscope that he's playing with.
It's, like, plastic. And she's, like, answering my questions still. And then all of a sudden she starts to go, like, I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is about to happen. I know she's, like, sweating through her jeans. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I'm like, do we have a bag? Get the bag. I just shove it in her face. She throws up. Like, it had to have been projectile vomit into this bag the way that it, like, lifted the whole thing up. I was like, oh, my God. I'm, like, trying not to gag, holding this thing up to her face. I'm like, are you okay? All right, we're good.
Someone get me a bag.
We need
another one. Get me another one.
And so she, like, finally stops throwing up a little bit. And I, like, turn to the nurse. I'm like, can we go somewhere else?
We're
in the middle of everything.
Yeah, I feel bad in that case, too. She's probably, like, embarrassed.
I'm like, can we go somewhere else? And they're like, oh, yeah, like, let's go back to the plane. I'm like, awesome. We go to the back of the plane. I'm like, can you ask if there's another medical provider on the flight?
It's not a first-year student.
And so then they go on the intercom, whatever.
There you go. Nailed it.
And they ask, and people come back. So then there's, like, a trauma nurse comes back. A trauma doctor comes back.
Oh, you're fine.
And I'm like, my job is done. I go and I talk to – I give – basically present to the trauma
wow,
guy.
Wow, you did an oral presentation yeah, to the trauma guy.
And he was like, oh, she ate here? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, she has food poisoning.
Yep. You're like, yeah.
And I'm like, oh.
Thanks, doc. Yep, nailed that.
That makes sense. He's like, yeah, it's definitely staph aureus. I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And then the trauma nurse was like, oh, I have Zofran on me. And we're like, perfect. Like,
sure.
Give her a little tablet.
Anybody get got her antibiotics?
get her some pretzels, some ginger ale. I'm like holding the girl's hand. And I'm like, you're going to be okay. She's like, thank you so much. And I was like, I didn't really.
I'm sorry, I almost puked on you.
I'm like, I held the bag for you. That's all I did.
That's my favorite part yeah. is people think we're way more involved than we are.
I was literally just receiving vomit.
When I was an undergrad student, I was in the labor and delivery room.
Yeah.
Just like shadowing. And I literally was just shadowing for a delivery. And obviously not the woman who delivered, but her mom came up to me afterwards and was hugging me and crying and was like, thank you so much. And I was like, you're welcome.
She's like, did you look at my face?
I was like, yeah, did you see me in the corner? I was just as scared as you. First time I've seen this.
Thank you so much. You're like, I know, that was a really tough case.
I know, I was so scared too. I was right there with you. yeah, it's crazy to think of how far we've come now. I have helped deliver a child. Like, I actually, my hands were the ones to catch the baby now.
Yeah.
I have helped to deliver a child. That's amazing. I've done a heart transplant. Nope, I've helped with it. I've been there for a heart transplant.
You were there. You helped. You held an old heart.
I've screwed a screw into a bone.
That's sick.
Yep, that was cool. I have helped with sutures. I have placed lap ports. I've done a ton of shit.
Yeah, we've assisted in real things at this point.
Yeah.
The medical student role. Yeah, at some point, it goes from talk to like
it's a trigger switch. Like,
yeah, you're like, you can be valuable.
Yeah, I for once actually feel like I'm helping in things. It's fantastic.
That's cool, man.
All right, if you guys like this type of segment, let us know. We have plenty of stories to keep going with. I feel like this is kind of what I had always wanted to hear when I was looking to become a medical student because I had no idea what being a student really involves.
Yeah, man.
Especially on rotations. So we can keep talking about this for sure.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's been a long, strange trip, but we're really just getting started too.
Crazy.
All right.
Thanks for listening. Check out the TikTok and the Instagram.
Yeah. Give us 5 stars on this. Download it, whatever. Send it to people.
Send Jack hate mail.
Yeah, of course.
Criticize him.
The email is right there in the description.
Yep.
That's mine.
That's definitely Jack's.
So email. I will receive that
email. And yeah, if Riley's doing anything wrong, don't tell him. He's superbly sensitive. no, just kidding. If you have any concerns about like what we're talking about, any recommendations, please let us know. We're always open to criticism.
Oh yeah. Cool.
Till next time.
Let's go get something to eat.
Yes, please. God.